the Fan. Just in case you missed it, it's the top five sports talkers of the day. Now, it's time for Dan Barrero's Top 5 at 5, driven by Borton Volvo. Safety has never looked so good.
Lots more football to get to in the 5 o'clock hour of the show. We are guest-free the rest of the way. Top 5 at 5 now, though.
Yeah, the Twins won their first two games back from the All-Star break. They took both games from Detroit. Sonny Gray, by the way, great showing yesterday. Six innings pitched, two hits, one earned run, seven strikeouts. The lead in the division is still at three, which I feel like every time I look at the standings, it's still at three games. It remains at three games. They get the Brew Crew in easy for me to say, in Milwaukee tomorrow night, and Bundy gets the nod for the Twinkies.
The, you know, you're looking for an elixir coming out of the break after kind of a shaky finish to the homestand the week before. Detroit Tigers, they're a mess. They performed like you expect a team with that record to perform, and we took full advantage. We had two legitimate starts. Our offense, in both cases, toyed with eventually the Tigers. Tigers defensively were a disaster. And we get the two wins. I think, meanwhile, you know, the White Sox and Guardians were playing each other. I think they split four. So at the end of the day, at the end of the weekend, as you say, with our two victories, it's three over the Guardians, four, I believe, over the White Sox. We are playing. Now, that's what's going to be, I think, intriguing about this next little stretch. Milwaukee's got a legitimate record. The San Diego Padres, and I think that's what we go to during the weekend, they have a legitimate record. And so it's a good opportunity for this club to, you know, step up because they're going to be playing much better teams than they played over the weekend against the Tigers. One of the key questions this week will be, how long will Buxton be out? They announced that he had this medical procedure, this platelet therapy that can be very helpful to his knee. To the injured knee. That's a sort of a chronic issue for him. But in doing so, you got to stay off it for a while. So the question is, I think it was easy to accept with the All-Star break. He's going to miss the Tigers game, but that's going to give him an opportunity to be healthier the rest of the way. The question is, how many more games does he have to sit? Because that therapy itself, I think, is kind of tough, and it's not something you come back from within, like, I don't think 24 or 48 hours. So that's still the open question. Is he going to miss the next two? Going to miss the next week? Or is it just he's going to miss two or three games moving forward? It's a trade-off that I think would be accepted if it doesn't go all that far, despite the fact that, of course, he's missed as many games as he has. So let's see how we do as we also approach the trade deadline, which is a week from tomorrow. And let's see how we do against improved competition.
Now, a couple of Vikings divisional opponents were in headlines. This one breaking within the hour, so we'll start with the hated Green Bay Packers. They reached contract extensions, allegedly, because it's still according to sources, and they haven't officially confirmed it unless it's happened in the last 10 minutes, with the GM, Brian Gutekunst, head coach Matt LaFleur, and executive vice president / director of football operations, Russ Ball, a league source told ESPN. Mark Murphy, the Packers president, wouldn't confirm, and they didn't ask me as an owner, would not confirm the extensions, but he said, I'll just say I'm confident not only Matt and Brian, but Russ will continue to be Packers employees for years to come. So we're getting new coaches and GMs here, and they're re-signing and promoting and extending people there.
They're doubling down. So what that tells me is they may be bothered by the fact that the team has underachieved in the postseason after some gaudy regular seasons, but they don't care. That these are our guys, we're committed to the bit, and we're going to play this thing out. Now, this wasn't a release, as you say. Did the reportage on this indicate what title Aaron Rodgers has been granted in this new...
Always.
Yeah.
No.
I assume he had to sign off. I assume they had to check with him before they went forward with this, but it is kind of interesting.
Well, they re-signed him. You would think he would like the guys he was working with.
Did you see, was it last week, some of the financial numbers came out on your Packer club and their profits went back. Was it 87 million?
It was a lot. Yeah. I remember they put it out, but it.
What's your cut? As an owner, do you know what your cut is?
My cut is pain every January. That's my cut of being, you know.
Yeah, to a certain extent.
Not a whole lot. You get the letter in the mail for coming to the meetings. You never go, though. The Bears also are in the news.
Really?
So they released there plenty of talk of Suburban Stadium versus, and where is it? Arlington Heights.
Correct.
Heights is the proposed destination. Yes. Well, Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, that is a name, basically put out the renderings today of what Soldier Field would look like had they put on a dome. They have like three different options, but more or less it's all putting on a dome or making it, air quotes, dome ready. Costs anywhere from $900 million to $2.2 billion to do this, all to keep the Bears in downtown Chicago. Where do you stand on the downtown stadium versus suburban stadium? And what do you think of the Bears?
Well, I historically, like here, for example, I tend to be a stadiums... Mega stadiums like this belong downtown because I'm a big city guy. I tend to think that that's a good thing. But I have to say, the Chicago case is so twisted. The Soldier Field has been very poorly managed. The remodel, I don't think, was particularly good. The turf has always been an issue. And frankly, I think it's too late. And I think the mayor is just trying to hold it together because she knows there's political ramifications if she doesn't. But the Bears have already, you know, put down some money on some land where there's a racetrack in Arlington Heights, and there they're going to have the opportunity. They don't have to share anything with the city. They're going to have one of those mega complexes where it's going to be the stadium, it's going to be hotels, it's going to be eateries, it's going to be the whole bit. So I think it's over, and I'm actually okay with it this time because I think, as I mentioned, Soldier Field, as much as I like the scene there, you're on the lakefront, it's the city of Chicago, big shoulders, the whole bit, that it almost feels like it's time. Move on with the rest of your lives. Although, frankly, you mentioned the Bears are in the news. This might be the last time the Bears are in the news this year because they're going to be bad this season. And I'm not convinced anything really changes with the Bears, even with a new stadium, as long as the same people own the club. They got ownership issues that I think are at the root of their particular problem. But I'm not surprised to see the mayor try to take a shot at it because she's got to at least make it look like Chicago is trying to keep them.
Yeah, the Braves really set the precedent for moving to the suburbs, building an entire city basically around their complex. And overnight, they went from one of the worst attended teams in the MLB to one of the best. This broke Friday, but I think it brings up an interesting point. So Matthew Tkachuk, are you familiar? Mm-hmm. Formerly of the Calgary Flames. He's gone, refusing to re-sign with them, essentially, so they deal him to Florida. They actually get a good haul back with Huberdeau, a defenseman, Mackenzie Weegar, a prospect, a lottery pick, blah, blah, blah. The point is that now this is two people from Calgary, Johnny Gaudreau, who wanted out, Matthew Tkachuk, who wanted out, and by the way, Tkachuk's already signed an 8-year contract with the Panthers. Ooh. So these are both guys who wanted out of Calgary and then signed new contracts in their new place. Granted, Columbus, where Johnny Gaudreau went, not really that big of a market. But the overall point is, people want out of Calgary. Calgary's a small market. It's cold. Do you think the Wild at some point are going to run into the same problem where maybe they want to be down in Miami? Maybe they want to be in Tampa and not really in small... Or do you think Minnesota is immune because it's hockey?
Well, it's interesting because this is not a subject we generally associate with hockey. You know, we associate it with basketball. We associate it with baseball, potentially. Even football to a certain degree. I never have thought of it in the hockey sense. I'd like to think we're going to be relatively immune to it. It's a healthy franchise. It is the state of hockey. I don't think, though, we can assume that just because we're the state of hockey that everybody's going to want to be here. You know, there have been many times where, as much as we want to believe that, we've had proof that that's not necessarily the case. What attracts people here from outside the area is there's a good team. There's a team where you got a chance to win there. And as long as we maintain that particular characteristic, then I think we'll be fine. But if we don't, then I don't think it's going to matter that we're the state of hockey. There's people, you know, natives who care about that. I don't think a lot of other groups talk about it when they come. But in all honesty, I think it's just an added thing they feel like they have to talk about. And they may have seen some things that they say, I wouldn't mind being a part of that. But they ain't going to want to stay a part of it unless we can make a couple of moves in the postseason.
Lastly, I teased it.
Faldus would be pleased, by the way, that you wedged hockey in.
Oh, yeah. I always managed to.
Was it his idea?
It wasn't, no.
Okay,
you shouldn't be sure. I managed to wedge the Packers and hockey in, so it's really par for the course here. Amazing how that works. So a 1952 mint condition Mickey Mantle baseball card is on auction right now.
Auction.
The card is widely regarded as one of just a handful in near-perfect condition. It's set to make records. What do you think the estimated cost of this 1952 mint condition Mickey Mantle baseball card would be?
Well, that's got to be 52. So that we're going back 70 years there? Man,
something
that's
like that.
Huge. I think I did the math right. It's got to be, if you're bringing it up, it's got to be some ridiculous amount of money that makes no sense to mere mortals amongst us. I'm going to say $2 million.
Well, I'll give you this. The current record that it's expected to break was for a 1909 Honus Wagner card. I believe I said that. I hope
you
I
did.
Said that correctly.
You did.
For $6.6 million. And it's expected to break that.
It's going to go above that.
Yeah.
I felt I was worried $2 million might be too much.
It is expected to go at $10 million. Right now, it's at $4.2 million.
Think about it. That's insane. But there's obviously people out there with a lot of money, and there are people who this stuff matters to.
One of the best switch hitters of all time.
Items. Yeah, he's a great player. Yeah, I spent some time with Mickey back in the day, Dallas, Texas, riding around in a limo. One of his books, I think, was going out. He could be a cranky sucker. Not going to lie to you. The Mick could be very, very difficult to deal with. Had a lot of bitterness. Had a lot of baggage. Had a lot of angst for lots of reasons, even though he was, as you say, one of the best players in the history of baseball. I live and learn. I never cease being stunned by why there is such a market that allows you to say, I'm going to write a check for $10 million for a bleeping baseball card, no matter how rare it is, no matter how far back it goes. It's I guess it means it's a hell of a world.
That's five for you. So that's the top five. Yeah, $10 million for essentially a piece of paper with something printed on it.
Do you want to put a grand in somebody's hand?
Yeah, why not? Let's do it. The Fan and Hilltop Camper and RV are trying to put a grand in your hand at the National Cash Contest. You have to go to KFAN.com, enter the keyword bonus for your shot at that $1,000. KFAN.com. Keyword bonus.
We've got some more quarterback fodder to get to. More controversy. I don't know if I call it controversy, but interesting analysis, this time via The Athletic, regarding the never-ending effort to rank the quarterbacks and put them in various tiers. How did our guy do this time? Is it any different than any other time? You might be disappointed. Then again, you might not be. Stay tuned for that next.
A Fan.
I can't believe I find myself here. Been living a fantasy, but now everything is there. It's hard to admit, but
remind me to get to a Golden Gopher men's basketball nugget. Definitely worth a minute or two before we wrap things up at 6:30 tonight on this edition of the Bumper to Bumper program. So everybody this time of year attempts to do what might be classified as rankings. And by rankings, I of course mean, let's get, especially at the sexiest positions, let's rank the best running backs, wide receivers, and most notably quarterbacks. The Athletic has now done it, and they do it they go with the tier approach, where they have a group of quarterbacks they classify as top tier, first tier, then they got some second tier, and then, you know what follows, it'd be third tier. How did our guy do? Well, let's first off work up to it a little bit. Let's talk about who's in that tier one. And they've been doing the tiers for a while, I think, at The Athletic. Mike Sando put this thing together. And his full 2022 quarterback tier results are in for every veteran starter. You will be excited to learn, if you didn't already know it, that your guy, A-Raj, is at the top of tier one. He is ranked number one. It's the eighth time in 9 years of quarterback tiers balloting that he finished no worse than tied for the top spot. This is an annual survey in which they get voting from 50 NFL coaches and executives, including 6 GMs, 8 head coaches, 10 evaluators, 12 coordinators, 6 QB coaches, and 7 execs whose specialties include analytics, game management, and the salary cap. The remaining ballot put together by 4 members of one team's personnel department. A-Raj is number one. Patrick Mahomes is number two. Tom Brady is listed at number three. I think the ESPN version of this had Brady number four, which is absurdly low. Brady is three here. Four is, no surprise, Josh Allen. He was ahead of Brady in the ESPN poll. He is rightly behind Brady in this one, but he is at four. Justin Herbert is fifth, still in the what we call top tier. Joe Burrow is number six. And that's all they have. Their tier one quarterbacks end there.
So they're not ranked within the tiers? They kind of are, but not really?
They're both. They're ranked within the tier, and then they're ranked by tier. Those are the six QBs in tier one, and I offer them in order of how they are evaluated according to these particularly this voting system. Now we get to tier two. Well, let me go back to their definition of what is a tier one quarterback. I think it's self-evident, but for the purposes of this discussion, a tier one quarterback is defined as a quarterback who can carry his team each week. The team wins because of him. He expertly handles pure passing situations, and he has no real holes in his game. Of course, in the case of A-Raj, the only hole would be postseason performance lately, but that's another story, which you're familiar with.
All too well.
Too familiar with, exactly it. So what is it? What is a tier two quarterback? Well, a tier two quarterback is defined as one who can carry his team sometimes, but not as consistently. He can handle pure passing situations in doses and or possesses other dimensions that are special enough to elevate him above a tier three. He may well have a hole or two in his game. So the top of tier two, you want to hazard any guesses? Who you think is number one in tier two, according to The Athletic and their voters?
I wish I would have done a little, because I know they were talking about it at around 2 o'clock as well with I'm really bad on the off top. I know that Cousins is going to be right in the middle. I think around 14-15 has to be, if I had to hazard a guess. That's my official guess. But as far as a top of tier two, off the top of my head, I don't know.
Matt Stafford is at the top of tier two.
Really?
He moves up from, actually, he commanded 18 tier one votes, up from four last year, but he remains seventh in the rankings. So he's seven. Russell Wilson, new home, Denver, is at eight. Russell needs to rebound. I'm a big Russell Wilson guy, but he needs to rebound. I think he's going to have the opportunity to do it, but I think he needs it.
He's a rebound after those videos he made for the Broncos, too. That was tough.
Deshaun Watson, who might not play a down or certainly isn't going to play soon, is the third tier two quarterback, ranked number nine overall. And Lamar Jackson is at number 10 overall, but is also classified as tier two. He climbed slightly in terms of average, but dropped three places in the rankings as Stafford, Herbert, and Burrow moved past him. They acknowledge there remains no player like him in the league. There's a quote that has gotten everybody's attention. It's an unnamed defensive coordinator. It's getting a lot of talk around the water cooler today. Here's the quote. If he has to pass to win the game, they ain't winning the game. He's so unique as an athlete, and he's a really good football player. And I don't care if he wins the league MVP 12 times. I don't think he'll ever be a one as a QB. He'll be a one as a football player, but not as a QB. So many games come down to 2 minutes, and that is why they have a hard time advancing, even when they are good on defense. Playoffs are tight. You have to be able to throw the ball. He's just so inconsistent throwing the ball. It's hit or miss. A lot of people have been offended by those comments, by the way. They've assumed Jack Del Rio made them, which he might have. I have absolutely no idea. But I don't completely disagree. I think it's a little harsh on him, but it's an open secret that as great a football player as he is, and as capable, as great he is running, and as capable as he can be throwing, he's an inconsistent thrower. His accuracy is an issue, and he's erratic. And no matter how much the game has changed for the multi-purpose guy who can do lots as much with his legs as he can with his arm, sooner or later, you're going to have to make a certain percentage of plays with your arm. Just a fact. I mean, there's a lot of great running quarterbacks. I mean, Mahomes, obviously, top of the list, is who's very mobile.
Kyler got a bunch of money, too, in Arizona.
We're going to get to Kyler because he's an interesting study as well. But the point is, Mahomes makes great throws when he's going good. Great throws. And this guy has not been that kind of a thrower. So I don't think it's all as controversial as some other people do. Dak Prescott is 11 overall, but also part of Tier 2. Dak Prescott, a guy who's become, I think, more polarizing as time has gone on, because he's had some stretches where he's looked dominant, and then there's been other stretches, especially against good teams, where, I don't know, where has he sort of reached his ceiling? Is it, you know, what we see, what we get with him, or is there another gear in him? Also in Tier 2, still in Tier 2, you'll notice number 8's name has not come up. Derek Carr, Vegas Raiders, is 12th overall. This is his highest standing since 2017, with the second best average of his career. One head coach saying he's close to Tier 1, Derek Carr is. Just from an intellect standpoint, he always put them in good position. He makes a lot of good decisions. But similar to Prescott and Stafford conversation, there's something different in Aaron Rodgers and Mahomes and Josh Allen. Carr is a notch below those guys. Kyler Murray, 13 overall. You just mentioned him. He, too, is listed in Tier 2. Remind me, we got a done as Kyler Murray related that we have to get to perhaps as quickly as next segment. Brought to my attention once again by unofficial producer of the show, One of Us Hollywood Actor Guy, that you can't make up. And he's not making this up, as it turns out. Murray is 13, just gets the big contract. A guy who can be dominant, but can also be awful. I feel like he's sort of at a crossroads here, that he's been around long enough now where he needs to figure the things out that he does badly, make them better, minimize those, and continue to maximize what he can do well. It's I think, a really crucial season for him, and he can't complain about the money. We're still in Tier 2. We are still in Tier 2. We are quarterback number 14. Is his name Kirk Cousins? Well, we'll find out after a very short break. Might not be happy with the results. Or then again, if you're not a Kirk Cousins devotee or Bobo, perhaps you say makes a lot of sense. AFAN. When we last left you, we were laying out details on the Athletic's yearly quarterback rankings service. And it's not just them evaluating. It's them gathering votes and comments from, well, frankly, all sorts of folks. General managers, eight head coaches, 10 evaluators, 12 coordinators, 6 QB coaches, etc. You get the drift. And we were still in Tier number 2. 14 overall. A lot of people probably would assume this is about the place that number 8 is supposed to land. Except he didn't. This is going to be very galling to many Kirk Obos and Kirk Cousins apologists out there.
Is Gardsy listening?
Matt Ryan, with a new team this year, is 14. He is the last quarterback listed in Tier 2. Here's what they say about Ryan, because he's an interesting case. A guy, you know, Matty Ice, once upon a time, with it and wow. A lot of people soured on him, but was he all that much worse, or did it have more to do with the team itself? In any case, they write that one evaluator says, I still think he can play. If you give him the run game, protect him, especially if you can protect him up the middle, he can throw it well enough and he's smart enough to keep the train going. He with those guys, the Colts, I think he's got a great chance. He's, I think, 37 or about to be 37 years old. He's 6 years removed from his last Pro Bowl, 5 from his last winning season. So is it him regressing? Or is the team itself the bigger issue with a new lease on life? Will things change? Because one former GM says with the Falcons, he just didn't have any help. Not saying he's the same guy who won the MVP, but I'm saying if you protect him, run the ball, he will get the ball to the right guy. He will see the blitz, etc. I tend to agree with that. I'm not like in love with him, but I think he's still got some football left in him. But he's the bottom of Tier 2. Still no number 8. Still no Kirk Cousins, much to the delight of Mike Zimmer. Tier 3 is described as a quarterback who is a legitimate starter but needs a heavier running game and or defensive component to win. A lower volume dropback passing offense suits him best. Tier 3. 15 overall. Number 8. That's where Kirk Cousins falls. It's where he always falls. Middle opaque. Not horrible. Not great. Midland. They note that if there's ever such a thing as a Tier 3 Hall of Fame, Kirk Cousins might get the first bust. Past 6 years in this very same survey, Cousins was first in Tier 3 twice, second twice, and fourth once. He was also the final quarterback in Tier 2 one year. Unnamed GM. I think he's one of the more accurate passers in the league, which is true. For whatever reason, in big moments, big games, he's not able to get it done. Now, because Kevin O'Connell is going there and their offense is going to open up, they'll maximize what he is. Is he Stafford, who had just been in some bad situations? I think he's a step below. Some voters referenced Zimmer's open disdain for Cousins as a factor working against the QB. They're saying that the partnership with O'Connell has to be better than that. An unnamed offensive coach. People want more, but guess what? He's a pretty damn good ball player. Now he's going to be in an offensive-minded oriented system where guys like Goff and Stafford have had success. People don't like him because they knock his leadership or his contract, but the reality is there's no one younger that you would want over him that you could get through the draft or trade. Sam Darnold, for example, Baker Mayfield, those guys. A head coach, unnamed, calls Cousins very skilled but suffering in natural leadership. I don't think his players would die for him, which is inspirational if you have players who will die for their QB. That's impressive. Primetime victory against Pittsburgh, in which Cousins completed 14 of 31 passes, lingered in the mind of one voter. They ran the ball straight up Pittsburgh's butt. That's aggressive. And he made about 3 throws the whole game. A couple outstanding throws, but other than that, he was terrible. One of the deep throws, the receiver pushes the DB in the back. I'm thinking, this is not the guy you're going to win a championship with. Then there's a comparison, an offensive coach comparing Cousins and Ryan. He says he would take Cousins over Ryan at this particular stage. So There it is. By the way, for the record, tier three, second QB, Jimmy G, followed by Ryan Tannehill, Mac Jones, Baker Mayfield, Jalen Hurts, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, Trevor Lawrence. This is still tier three, Jameis, and that's the end of tier three. I'll just mention briefly, tier four is headed up by Bears quarterback Justin Fields. Right now, he's classified as the top of the tier fours. So the moral of the story is, it's really nothing new on number eight. And I know the Cousins fans get sick of it. They think their guy is underrated. They think he's misunderstood. Beauty of this season is he will have every opportunity to finally take a step that he largely has not taken. I can't argue with pretty much anything that's thrown out there about number eight. That's about where he belongs. We can argue about Matt Ryan. I think you can have that discussion. But that's it. I mean, that's the deal. I mean, I think that's the extent of it here. The most intriguing subplot to this season, without any question, even though defense is a bigger issue, or was a bigger issue the last 2 years, I still think the most intriguing aspect is what happens with number eight. How they deploy him, how different it looks, and what I think they demand of him. Because I think there's reason to believe they're going to demand a lot. Not necessarily because they believe in him, but they believe, I think these people, based on where they came, especially the head coach, that they believe whoever their quarterback is, certain things are required of him, are to be expected of whoever that guy is. And that means tight windows. That means taking calculated risks, and that means going after it a little bit. I think they're going to demand that of him, and I think that's probably good. I don't know that he's up for it, but you could say, all right, the Vikings did it a different way, a more cautious way, because Zimmer didn't have great faith in him. I think there are reasons Zimmer didn't, but you could say, if you want to believe that became a self-fulfilling prophecy, then there's only one other way to do it. It's to try a different approach, and it could be, you know, feast or famine. It could be that he emerges into that second tier, or it could be it's a disaster because he throws eight pick sixes. Then again, the guy who used to be in Detroit, who led the Rams to the Super Bowl, he had some terrible pick sixes last year. And yet the Rams kept hanging in there saying, no, we do what we do. We take that approach. And so that's what's going to be interesting. There's definitely going to be a different way to go. And if you are wired in a certain sort of passing philosophy in terms of that's part of what is it, that is part of winning. It's a requirement of winning in the National Football League to play a certain way. I think they're going to go after it. They're going to test him on that. They may regret it, or they may find out that he's not up to it and they got to make a long, hard, you know, tough decision at the end of this season. But I do firmly believe they're gonna expect more out of him. And maybe this is all he's been waiting for. I don't know. He's been around a long time with a lot of different coaches, and it's difficult for me to believe that there's that different of a gear. I feel strongly about this regardless of position. Been a lot of talk about in these occasional out loud quotes, grumblings about people weren't friendly enough. Everybody was too tense. Every mistake was, if you made one mistake, it was magnified and turned into, you know, the worst mistake in the history of football. A couple things about that. I'm not sure that has as much to do with Mike Zimmer or any coach as it does the circumstance. If you are in year eight and you've meandered, and in this case, the Vikings have now not made the playoffs 3 of the last 4 years. no matter who the coach is, no matter what the situation is, everybody tightens up whether they want to admit it or not. It's 8 years in. Nobody's tight now because it's easy not to be tight now. This is year one. This is the honeymoon. This is where it all starts. So the idea that there's something particularly pernicious or different about, people were afraid, they were walking on eggshells the whole bit, that's the nature of it. And I'll also add that whether, number eight had a lot of good numbers. The scoring numbers weren't as good as they should be. But to the players, especially the players who've been vocal about what they thought was lacking here, let's at least consider the possibility that their own performance entered into whatever dysfunction, the level of dysfunction that we saw with the Minnesota Vikings, late meltdowns at the end of halves and the end of games, both offensively and defensively. Is that all on Zim? Is that all on the systems? Some of it might well be that. But some of it is players also, especially the players who've been vocal, need to look in the mirror. And they have to acknowledge the possibility that they didn't play as well as they were supposed to play. They broke down in some key situations, and it's easy to want to turn that into somebody else's problem. I hope this new coach doesn't let them, because at some point, I've said it before, I'll say it again. You go back to when Chili was replaced by Les Frazier. What did we hear over and over again? We're smothering here. It's a constipated atmosphere. There's no trust. The head coach doesn't really believe in the players. We can't breathe. We can't even do anything. And then they openly campaigned for Leslie Frazier. And they said, we'll play for him. He gets us. Players coach, et cetera, et cetera. How'd that work out? Cautionary tale. Now, Leslie Frazier and Kevin O'Connell are two different coaches. It's two different eras. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to not go well here for O'Connell as well. But I'm just more, even in the way players have changed, what we hear from players has changed, what they expect has changed. I'm still more suspicious than some people about the notion that just let us be ourselves. I think sometimes that makes it a little too easy for players to not hold themselves accountable. Johnny Athletic made a great point. You could say on who's our third string quarterback?
Well, it would be Mond, I guess.
Kellen Mond now, yes. The kid. Nobody liked what Zimmer said late. Zimmer was just in attack mode at that point because he knew his days were numbered. But the fact of the matter is, so again, there's almost this implication that Mond was being held back and they were too mean to him, etc. Well, some of it, believe it or not, was Mond didn't do much. He wasn't impressing anybody. Frankly, I didn't even think it was a draft choice that made any sense at the time that the Vikings took him. But besides that, you can't leave out the accountability quotient for players. I just wish two or three of them, somewhere along, I would trust what they have had to say about Zimmer and other things if every once in a while they'd say, you know what, though? We got to play better. It's a little bit of a trap that's too easy for players to fall into that, we couldn't breathe. It was too tough. It was unreasonable. We were walking on eggshells. That makes it too easy, I think, for players who, there were a lot of Vikings players last year who, even good players, who didn't have great seasons. And not, I don't remember any of them that have raised their hand and said, yeah, I'd like to see some things change in terms of our approach. But we also, each of us need to, as the cliche goes, look in the mirror. We need to acknowledge that some of what was going on there when we're blowing assignments wasn't that the coaches were putting us in a bad spot. It wasn't necessarily that we're walking on eggshells. We didn't make the play. We were in the wrong place. We overcompensated. We either tried to do too little or tried to do too much. All those should factor in there. I do have a dunass related to Kyler Murray that Well, put it this way. I was in the group that assumed that Arizona didn't have really much choice, even if they were worried about his progress to sign him, because where else do you go if it's not going to be him? Based on this particular development, I'm not so sure that they should have signed him.
Radio station.
We were chatting earlier about the Kyler Murray contract. It's been, you know, quite the topic of conversation. Massive money for a player who's shown great promise, but also a pretty prominent erratic streak. And your guy, Ian Rappaport, national insider for the NFL Network and NFL.com, has offered up, this was just as of a couple of hours ago, an interesting tweet with some details about some of the finer points of the contract. He writes, contracts are about give and take. One example from Cardinals quarterback Kyler Murray's $230.5 million contract. There is an addendum that requires 4 hours of, quote, independent study, unquote, per game week. It was important to the team making a commitment at that level. Thus, it was important to Murray. Think about that. You need to put it, apparently, in writing after rewarding your QB with a $231 million contract that he will do per game week as many as 4 hours. Four, count them, of independent study. Here's the best part about it. I mean, he's got it, and he's got the actual clause in here. Does Rappaport. Independent study means player studies the material provided to him by the club in order to prepare for the club's next upcoming game. Silly me, I just thought, that's automatic, isn't it? That's the job. That's what you do. You're the quarterback, especially not entirely because of the money, but in part you say, that's this kind of commitment. That's we take that for granted. You don't need to put that in writing. That's just assumed. Well, no, they apparently, the Cardinals have so little faith. They apparently feel like they got to write it out. This includes, without limitation, any such material provided via an iPad or other electronic device. Time spent in mandatory meetings shall not constitute independent study. So they say, Kyle, you can't deduct an hour because the quarterback meeting went an hour long and now you're down to three. No. We're saying above and beyond that. That can't count. There again, so little faith in the guy they're paying. They feel like we got to make sure he doesn't try to cut a corner there. Players shall receive no credit for independent study for any period during which player does not personally study the provided material in good faith. I guess this is the old, you got some documents in front of you, you got some plays in front of you, but you're dozing off or you're zoning out. But wait, it gets better. For the avoidance of doubt, players shall not receive any credit for independent study with respect to any time periods during which any material is displayed on or played on an iPad other, or other electronic device if the player and I'm not making this up, is not personally studying or watching the material while it is being deployed or played. Or B, player is engaged in any other activity that may distract his attention. For example, watching TV, playing video games, or browsing the internet while such material is being displayed or played.
Do you know how many credits he actually needs to before he graduates with all these credit hours?
It's as good as it gets, isn't it? It's as good as it gets. So, moral of the story, if this is all accurate, and I assume it is, I'd be worried if I'm an Arizona Cardinals fan. That you got to write this out to that degree, and you got to make sure, and you can't have Netflix on another screen. You know, the kids know how, like, my daughter, she's got like 8 screens running at once. I don't even know how she does it, but she does it. The kids know how to do it. You probably do too.
I do, yeah.
You can't have 6 or 7 screens running. That's not going to count as your 4 hours of independent study. It's as good as it gets. It's actually, quite frankly,
this is the end. My only friend, the end.
Stuff that ordinarily we'd say, yeah, that's the job. That's what we are requiring you to do, but we don't have to. We just assume it. As one wiseacre put it, a team is making its star quarterback study on his own for 4 hours a week. We'll give him credit for it and said it can't be done while he's watching TV or playing video games. What else do you really need to know? I would say those are alarm bells that would be going off. Would there not be, in my mind?
How do they confirm this is my question. Like, do they have somebody with them that's like,
point.
Oh, he's not distracted. I was
great
there.
Point.
You know, just watching over his shoulder, breathing down his neck. I
the
don't
honor
know.
Honor system, I guess. Yeah. I don't know that I, but if you.
No, I'm telling you, I learned all about
this
it.
This isn't like, this is a professional quarterback, right? This isn't like some kid kind of not wanting to do his homework at the age of, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, you know, playing all the angles, you know, trying to figure out ways out of it. This is his place of employment. And by the way, a place that's paying him an obscene amount of money. But we got to cover our bases. We got to make sure. Now, the way Rappaport wrote it, it almost sounds like he's saying, well, that the QB insisted that this be in writing because he wants to show how serious he is. And I'm thinking, no, this wouldn't be necessary on either party if there is a built-in belief that whatever the amount of hours necessary to master the game plan or to be as fully prepared as you can be for every game situation, our guy's going to do it. We don't need to put an hour's out. He'll just do it. If some weeks it takes 4 hours, great. Other weeks it might take 15. He'll do it. And I love that part about can't count the quarterback meetings. Just in case you were thinking about it, we see it coming on that. You're not putting anything over on us. That does not indeed count. That's just too good. It's too good. Is it not?
Do they count a lunch break in that that independent study?
That's
he
a great
need
question.
A,
I don't know.
I just love that they also made sure it was 4. Like, I wonder how they settled on 4 hours of independent study of what he's doing. Or and you can't count the meetings. You can't count the film sessions and the. Well, that's because they can monitor him there. But yeah, I don't know if the Zoom meetings count or if there's. I want to know how this
put
is enforced.
The video
that's
game
my
away,
question,
Kyler. Yeah, you're right. It's almost like, well, we're going to have to hire somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Just hang around to be sure he's sticking with it. And again, if you have to go through these hoops, then you got to think long and hard about what you're committing to and what is realistic to expect. God, I just love it. There's a million weird contract clauses. I never saw this one coming. And now maybe there's a lot more of these involving the work ethic part of it than I thought. Maybe this is more commonplace, but I swear to you, I'm left gobsmacked on this one. I'm absolutely gobsmacked that this is the National Football League, a starting quarterback, a somewhat established, very promising, talented young quarterback who's had absolute moments of greatness. Not some guy who just came in off the street. And this is what we have to do. We're going to, you know, maybe in their mind they're saying, well, if we need to get out of the contract, because this is a breach of contract if he doesn't do it. So maybe in their minds they say, well, we're going to give ourselves some outs because there's a decent chance he's actually not going to do it. And we don't necessarily have to hold him to it unless we feel it's necessary perhaps to get out of the contract, as long as we have that information. But as you say, how are you going to get that information?
I have no idea. And this is bulletin board material for the millennials are lazy, they don't do anything type crowd. I mean, I could totally see him being in a Zoom meeting and, you know, put away the Fortnite. You know, we got a game plan. Yeah, they run a 4-3 and I'm in the final circle right now, you know, and I've got to pay attention to this game. I already know the game plan.
Somebody asked a good question. Does playing Madden as himself,
great point,
does that count as independent study or would that be considered a distraction?
Hey, there are training courses in Madden on how to beat a cover 3 defense. You know, maybe he's got to go in and play as himself, scramble around. You know, hopefully he doesn't run out of stamina.
Emailer Matt, hearing your description of how explicitly the Cards must set forth their expectations, I no longer take it for granted that every NFL starter is automatically doing such things. It gives me new appreciation for the culture Brady described with the Patriots, where there was a continual competition between players and the team to out-prepare each other. I just assumed, I don't necessarily assume it at other positions. I don't. But I have, and maybe naively, assumed it at quarterback. Now, you could say, well, no, part of the reason probably beyond physical talent, put it this way, you match up a couple of players who have similar passing ability in terms of their arm strength, accuracy, maybe even their mobility. And you could say, what separates the two? Well, some of it might be this. Maybe it's true that there are more quarterbacks out there who just aren't interested in that side of it. And they mail it in so often that it ends up showing up. And that's why they end up struggling or having difficulties. I just think if you have to be this explicit, you got a problem. And how long has he been there now? 4 years? How long has Murray been a QB?
That's a good question. He's been there for a hot minute.
I think he's been there for a while.
From Oklahoma.
I would say.
He drafted 2019.
Okay.
First round.
Yeah. So
first overall.
19, 20, 21. So this will be his fourth year, I guess. Point is, it's long. Even though he's young, I've been there long enough. I mean, we had this discussion, Garzi and I, the other day. Can you really say Kyler Murray is better or was better than Kirk Cousins last year? And you could make the argument the answer is no. That Cousins was more reliable. The issue there is, I think, I'm more likely to think that kind of Cousins is who he is. And Murray, well, at least until I saw this particular contract information, I said, well, he's still young enough where the upside is such that if he does, quote unquote, figure it out, he's got a chance, then he's going to be a better QB because he can do more things if he figures this stuff out. If he, for example, reaches a point where he's doing 8 hours of independent study,
yeah,
for every game,
how about that?
Then you say where maybe he becomes tier one, and he becomes top five, top six QB.
I mean, before last season, if the Vikings trade 1-for-1 Cousins for Kyler, the Vikings win more games. Period. In my mind, I mean, that's just there. There's a higher
before skill. Last season.
Before last season, If they traded 1-for-1, I think they win more games.
You're probably right, although, again, when he was bad last year, he was really bad.
But when he was good,
he was really good. And you could say he's more likely to make some plays without a good offensive line, and that's something that obviously
more really dynamic.
Hamstrings number 8 for sure. One last chance to put a grand in somebody's hand, shall we?
That's right. The Fan and Hilltop Camper and RV are trying to put a grand in your hand with the National Cash Contest. Head to KFAN.com, enter the keyword green. That is green for your shot at $1,000. KFAN.com.
Keywords.com.
You're listening to The Fan.
Yeah.
It's the Bumper to Bumper Show Wrap.
Couple requests coming in to the Bradshaw and Brian inbox. Do we need to have an emergency big knocker segment? Maybe. Monkeypox, I think the WHO, was it earlier today, declared a international emergency on it. And maybe we need a monkeypox update. I have no idea. We'll keep that in mind. We'll keep that under consideration. But there are a lot of, questions that are worthy of posing to him and perhaps getting a bit of an update on where we are with that thing. I want to thank our guest today, Johnny Athletic, who joined for three segments. Yeah, not two, three. If you're interested, podcast will be available from the 4 o'clock hour of the show. We podcast by the hour here. And so please give yourself a listen, because Johnny and I covered pretty much everything from the Hall of Fame voting controversy to the Minnesota Twins possible trade ideas to lots on training camp opening Wednesday, Kirk Cousins stuff. Yes, there was some Wolves conversation as well, but a whole lot of football stuff, including his own reaction to the interesting comments from the Vikings GM on number 8, Kirk Cousins, and perhaps even some concern he has about whether this is going to work with the Vikings' number 1 quarterback. Very just sort of strange quotes that apparently were uttered back in May when this reporter spent time here, but were only published today, USA Today, and online via usatoday.com. I can't get over the idea of, even if you have to have a monitor, imagine yourself being in the position to say, Kyler, off, off Netflix. I can see what you're watching.
No!
It's just bizarre. The whole thing is just very, very strange. Tomorrow's program will include a visit with Kessler. Why are we moving Kessler to Tuesday? Well, because Wednesday we will be at training camp. The opening practices for your Minnesota Vikings will chronicle every minute of it. Guardsy and I from there, from the exclusive Fan Radio Network perch. And Kevin O'Connell will be among our guests Wednesday. We expect Ben Gessling to join us on Wednesday. We expect Kevin Seifert to join us on Friday when we broadcast live from the People's Stadium where the Vikings will be practicing and training. So two big dates with football destiny later this week on Wednesday and again on Friday. And we've got a couple other things in the works, shall we say, that we might add to the guest list before we are indeed done. It is difficult. Well, it's not maybe difficult to accept that we're basically... won't be long till we'll be saying the season starts in a month. I mean, that's what's crazy. Preseason games are, what, a couple of weeks?
Something like
that. Right around the corner. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, it's
what they are. And we're going to chronicle as much of it as we possibly can. We're going to get into every nook, every cranny, every controversy. And this is my pledge. During the Vikings training camp period, I will pledge to 4 hours each week of independent study on training camp tendencies, on key training camp battles, and ancillary points. That's my pledge. And now it's not in writing. It's not in a contract. So I guess I can't be held to it. But I'm going to pledge 4 hours of independent study each and every training camp week the rest of the way.
If you counted this show as independent study, you'd only need a half hour more.
Yeah.
So done for the day.
I'd be done for the day. But I can't count that. Because that's what they're kind of, I think, trying to emphasize to Kyler Murray, so we won't do it.
I also like how they said browsing the internet, which is the most generic thing you can. Just covering all your bases of just browsing the internet.
Think
using
about
a technological device.
It's very strange. Oh, also, we talked early about, that we kind of are what we are, Well known that the Vikings have an endless array of very good football players that have gone on to make the Pro Football Hall of Fame. and no Super Bowl victories to show for it, we were reminded that Tony Oliva and Jim Cotto had a big weekend in Cooperstown getting inducted. They are two of five total Twins players, all Hall of Famers, who played for the Twins from 70 to 73. And they are one of the that's the largest number of players on the same team, five, without winning a World Series. We got that going for us. There's some other teams that have tied us for that. I don't think anybody touches us, though, when it comes to the National Football League. Back from the Bud Grant days, the Hall of Fame players that ended up with not a single Super Bowl. And as Johnny Athletic reminded us, more modern era, one could say. I mean, Moss, CC, Hutch. Now, Hutch was an offensive lineman elsewhere, too, but Randall McDaniel. And those players didn't even get to the bowl. So the moral of the story is we are what we are, as painful as it might be to accept. I think most people out there have accepted it, and I now understand why they may feel the need for therapeutic session or sessions every once in a while to help them cope with what seems to be the inevitability of us not winning. We've had some exceptions. We know about them. 87 Twins, 91 Twins. In fact, Burt Blyleven won a World Series ring in 87. Second stint with the Twins. We know about the Lynx, who are a mess right now, by the way. But we know about the championships. Those really are the only exceptions at this point.
You know what else that stat puts to bed? The Mall of America curse. Because obviously it's been happening since before the Mall of America was constructed.
That's a fair point. Yeah, you're right about that. The alleged, I think that one was always a little bit forced.
Oh, 100%.
But when you're desperate and you're trying to come up with ideas that...
What happened in 1992?
Well, yeah, that explain things. Because the other alternative is we just aren't good enough. We always find a way to screw it up. It's not very comforting. So you say, well, you can't really blame us because it's some sort of a cabal. It's some sort of a curse. It's some sort of a series of unexplained events that no enterprising team or head coach or general manager could rise above it. Now, you know, I like the newly introduced David Ortiz curse, the curse of the big poppy, because we have not won a single postseason series since Big Poppy left.
Series.
We've won. Now, we won a game or two, but we've not won a series. The last time we won a series, Big Poppy, was a Minnesota Twin. That one holds up pretty nicely and, again, maybe gives us some comfort and takes the teams themselves off the hook. Twins back in action tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that. Playing a good team, too. And so we can talk more baseball, get a day closer to the trade deadline as well, and see if there's any new speculation there. Thanks for listening this afternoon. Fan and Amanda will follow us tonight, and I'm assuming it's Dan Patrick after that. Brett Blakemore will be with me again tomorrow. Guardsy back with me from training camp in Eagan on Wednesday. Enjoy the rest of your Monday.